If I can't depend on you, I don't want to see you near me. Any questions? There was an embarrassed silence, as there always is on such occasions. Then a hand went up. It belonged to a dwarf. "Is it true a troll killed the Grag?" he asked. There was a murmuring from the watchman, and he went on, a little less timorously. "Well," he did ask. "Captain Carrot is investigating," said Vimes. "At the moment we are still in the dark. But if, indeed, there has been a murder, then I will see that the murderer is brought to justice, no matter what size they are, what shape they are, who they are, or where they may be. You have my guarantee on that, my personal guarantee. Is that acceptable?" The general change in the atmosphere indicated that it was so. "Good," he said. "Now go out there and be coppers. Go on." The room emptied of all except those still labouring over the knotty problem of where they should put the comma.
Permission to speak freely, sir," said Detritus, knuckling closer.
Vimes stared at him. "When I first met you, you were chained to a wall like a watchdog and didn't speak much beyond a grunt," he thought. "Truly, the leopard can change his shorts." "Yes, of course," he said.
"You ain't serious, are you? You're not going running after a coprolite like Chrysophrase, sir?
What's the worst he can do to me?"
Rip your head off, grind you to mince, and make soup from your bones, sir," said Detritus promptly. "And if you was a troll, you'd have all your teeth knocked out and make cufflinks out of them."
"Why'd he choose to do that now? Do you think he's looking for a war with us? That's not his way. He's hardly going to kill me by appointment, is he? He wants to talk to me. It's got to be to do with the case. He might know something. I don't dare not go, but I want you along. Scrounge up a squad, will you?" A squad would be sensible, he admitted to himself. The streets were just too nervous at the moment. He compromised with Detritus and a scratch band of whoever was doing nothing at the moment. There was one thing you could say about the watch. It was representative. If you based your politics on what other people looked like, then you couldn't claim the watch was on the side of any shape. That was worth hanging on to. It seemed quieter outside, not so many people on the streets as usual. That wasn't a good sign. Ankh-Morpork could feel trouble ahead like spiders could feel tomorrow's rain. What was this? The creature swam through a mind. It had seen thousands of minds since the universe began, but there was something strange about this one. It looked like a city. Ghostly, wavering buildings appeared through a drizzle of midnight rain. Of course, no two minds were alike. The creature was old, although it would be more accurate to say that it had existed for a long time. When, at the start of all things, the primordial clouds of mind had collapsed into gods and demons and souls of all levels, it had been among those who had never drifted close to a major accretion. So it had entered the universe aimlessly, without task or affiliation, a scrap of being blowing free, fitting in wherever it could, a sort of complicated thought looking for the right kind of mind. Currently, that is to say, for the past 10,000 years, it had found work as a superstition. And now it was in this strange, dark city. There was movement around it, the place was alive, and it rained. For a moment, just then, it had sensed an open door, a spasm of rage it could use. But just as it leapt to take advantage, something invisible and strong had grabbed it and flung it away. Strange. With a flick of its tail, it disappeared into an alley. The Pork Futures Warehouse was one of those things, the sort that you get in a city that has lived with magic for too long. The occult reasoning, if such it could be called, was this. Pork was an important commodity in the city. Future pork, possibly even pork as yet unborn, was routinely traded by the merchants. Therefore, it had to exist somewhere, and the Pork Futures Warehouse came into existence, icy cold within as the pork drifted backwards in time. It was a popular place for cold storage, and for trolls who wanted to think quickly. Even here, away from the more troubled areas of the city, the people on the streets were watchful. And now they watched Vimes and his motley squad pull up outside of the warehouse doors.
"I reckon at least one of us should go in with you," Detritus rumbled, as protective as a mother hen. "Chrysophrase won't be alone, you can bet on that."
He unslung the peacemaker, the crossbow he had personally built from a converted siege weapon, the multiple bolts of which tended to shatter in the air from the sheer stress of acceleration. They could remove a door not simply from its frame, but also from the world of objects bigger than a matchstick. Its incredible inaccuracy was part of its charm. The rest of the squad very quickly got behind him.
"Only you, then, Sergeant," said Vimes. "The rest of you, come in only if you hear screaming. Me screaming, that is."
He hesitated and then pulled out the gooseberry, which was still humming to itself.
"And no interruptions, understand?"
"Yes, insert name here."
Vimes pulled open the door. Dead, freezing air poured out around him. Thick frost crackled under his feet. Instantly his breath twinkled in clouds. He hated the Pork Futures warehouse. The semi-transparent slabs of yet-to-be-meat hanging in the air, accumulating reality every day, made him shiver for reasons that had nothing to do with the temperature. Sam Vimes considered crispy bacon to be a food group in its own right, and the sight of it travelling backwards in time turned his stomach the wrong way. He took a few steps inside and looked around in the dank, chilly greyness.
"Commander Vimes," he announced, feeling a bit of a fool.
Here, away from the doors, freezing mist lay knee-high on the floor. Two trolls waded through it toward him. More lichen, he saw, more clan graffiti, more sheep skulls.
"Leave weapons here," one rumbled.
"Baa,"
said Vimes, striding between them. There was a click behind him, and the faint song of steel wires, under tension yet yearning to be free. Detritus had shouldered his bow.
"You can try taking this one off of me if you like," he volunteered.
Vimes saw, further into the mist, a group of trolls. One or two of them looked like hired grunts. The others, though, he sighed. All Detritus needed to do was fire that thing in this direction, and quite a lot of the organised crime in the city would suddenly be very disorganised, as would be Vimes if he didn't hit the floor in time. But he couldn't allow that. There were rules here that went deeper than the law. Besides, a 40-foot hole in the warehouse wall would take some explaining. Chrysophrase was sitting on a frost-crusted crate. You could always tell him in a crowd. He wore suits when few trolls aspired to more than a few scraps of leather. He even wore a tie with a diamond pin, and today he had a fur coat around his shoulders. That had to be for show. Trolls liked low temperatures. They could think faster when their brains were cool. That's why the meeting had been called here. "Right," Vimes thought, trying to stop his teeth from chattering. "When it's my turn, it's going to be in a sauna."
"Mr. Vimes, good of you to be coming," said Chrysophrase jovially. "These gentlemen are all high-toned businessmen of my acquaintance. I expect you can put names to faces."
"Yeah, the Breccia," said Vimes.
"Now then, Mr. Vimes, you know that don't exist," said Chrysophrase innocently. "We just band together to further troll interests in the city via many charitable concerns. You could say we are community leaders. There's no call for name-calling."
Community leaders, Vimes thought. There'd been a lot of talk about community leaders lately, as in community leaders appealed for calm, a phrase the Times used so often that the printers probably left it set in type. Vimes wondered who they were and how they were appointed, and sometimes if appealing for calm meant winking and saying, "Do not use those shiny new battle axes in that cupboard over there. No, not that one, the other one." Ham Crusher had been a community leader.
"You said you wanted to talk to me alone," he said, nodding toward the shadowy figures. Some of them were hiding their faces.
"That is so. Oh, these gentlemen behind me, they will be leaving us now," said Chrysophrase, waving a hand at them. "They're just here so you understand that one troll, that is yours truly, is speaking for the many, and at the same time, your good sergeant there, my old friend Detritus, is going outside for a smoke. Would that be the case? This conversation is between you and me, or it don't happen."
Vimes turned and nodded to Detritus. Reluctantly, with a scowl at Chrysophrase, the sergeant withdrew. So did the trolls. Boots crunched over the frost, and then doors slammed shut. Vimes and Chrysophrase looked at one another in literally frozen silence.
"I can hear your teeth chatting," said Chrysophrase. "This place just right for troll, but for you it freezes to brass monkey, right? That's why I bring this fur coat."
He shrugged it off and held it out.
"There, just you and me here, okay?"
Pride was one thing. Not being able to feel your fingers was another. Vimes wrapped himself in the fine, warm fur.
"Good. Can't talk to a man whose ears are froze, eh?"
said Chrysophrase, pulling out a big cigar case.
"Firstly, I am hearing where one of my boys was disrespectful to you. I'm hearing how him suggesting I am the kind of troll that would get personal, that would raise a hand to your lovely lady and your little boy, who is growing up so fine. Sometimes I am despairing of young trolls today. They show no respect. They have no style. They lack finesse. It's in the them things with wings laying them egg things. Fox in a hen house. That's the, you know, fur, big ears. Bunny? Right. Bash one dwarf and sneak out now, trollard. Stop at one, Mr. Vimes. It's like you people and peanuts. The game got that right. What's this game? You never played Thud?
Oh, that. I don't play games, said Vimes. And on the subject of slab, you do run the biggest pipeline, just between you and me, here and now.
Nah, I'm out of the whole thing, said Chrysophrase, waving his cigar dismissively. You could say I am seeing the error of my ways. From now on, it's clean living, straight down the middle. Property and financial services, that is the way forward.
Glad to hear it.
Besides, the kids are moving in, Chrysophrase went on. Sedimentary trash. And they cut slab with bad sulphides and cooked it up with ferric chloride and crap like that. You thought slab was bad. You wait till you see slide. Slab makes a troll go and sit down to watch all the pretty colours, be no trouble to no one, nice and quiet. But slide make him feel like the biggest, strongest troll in the world. Don't need sleep, don't need food. After a few weeks, don't need life. That ain't for me.
Yeah, why kill your customers? Said Vimes.
Low blow, Mr. Vimes. Low blow. Nah, the new kids, after time they on slide theyselves.
Too much fighting. Too much of no respect.
He narrowed his eyes and leaned forward.
I know names and places.
It's your duty as a good citizen to tell me then, said Vimes.
Ye gods, what does he think I am?
But I want those names. Slide sounds nasty. Right now we need battle-crazy trolls like we need a hole in the head, which we'll probably end up getting.
Can't tell ya. Dat da problem, said Chrysophrase. This ain't the time.
You know what's happening out there. If the stupid dwarfs want to fight, we'll need every troll. That's what I saying.
I tell him, my people, give Vimes a chance. Be good citizens, not rocking around the boat. People still listening to me and my associates, but not for much longer.
I hope you on the case, Mr. Vimes.
Captain Carrot is investigating right now, said Vimes. Chrysophrase's eyes narrowed again.
Carrot Iron Fanderson, he said. The big dwarf? He a lovely boy, bright as a button, but to trolls that won't look so good, I tell you flat.
It doesn't look that good to dwarfs, if it come to that, said Vimes, but it's my watch. I'll not be told who I put on what case.
You trust him? Said Chrysophrase.
Yes.
Okay, he a thinker, he shiny, but Iron Fanderson, dwarf name, dat a problem right there. But the name Vimes, dat name means a lot. Can't be bribed. He once arrested the patrician. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but honest like anything, and he don't stop digging.
Chrysophrase caught Vimes's expression.
That's what they say. I wishing Vimes was on this case, cause him like me, bare-knuckle boy, he get at the truth soon enough. And to him I say, no troll did dat ting, not like dat.
Forget that he's talking street troll, Vimes told himself. That's just to seem like a good old troll.
This is Chrysophrase. He beat out most of the old-style mobsters, who were pretty sharp players themselves, and he holds off the Thieves' Guild with one hand. And that's without sitting in a pile of snow. You know he's right. But not the sharpest knife in the drawer, thank you so very much.
But Captain Carrot was shiny, was he?
Vimes's mind always looked for connections and came up with,
who is Mr. Shine?
Chrysophrase was absolutely still, apart from the greenish smoke spiralling up from the cigar. Then, when he spoke, his air was uncharacteristically jovial.
Him? Oh, a story for kids. Kind of like a troll legend from the far-off days of long ahead, he said.
Troll lore says that living creatures actually move backwards through time.
He met Chrysophrase's gaze.
Trying to bribe a watch officer is a serious offence, he said.
The troll winked.
Honest like anything, I tell him. Nice to have this little talk, Mr. Vimes.
When they were well outside, Vimes pulled Detritus into an alley, in so far as it was possible to pull a troll anywhere.
OK, what do you know about Slide? He said.
The troll's red eyes gleamed.
I've been hearing rumours.
Head to Treacle Mine Road and put a heavy squad together. Go to Turnagain Lane behind the Scours. There's a wedding cake maker up there, I think. You've got a nose for drugs. Poke it around, Sergeant.
Right, said Detritus. You've been told something, sir.
Let's just say I think it's an earnest of good intent, shall we? Said Vimes.
That's good, sir, said the troll. Earnest who?
Someone we know wants to show us what a good citizen he is. Get to it, okay?
Detritus slung his crossbow over his shoulder for ease of carriage and knuckled off at high speed. Vimes leaned against the wall. This was going to be a long day. And now he...
On the wall, just a little above head height, a troll had scored a rough sketch of a cut diamond. You could tell troll graffiti easily. They did it with a fingernail, and it was usually an inch deep in the masonry. Next to the diamond was scored Shine.
Ahem,
said a small voice in his pocket. Vimes sighed and pulled out the gooseberry while still staring at the word.
Yes. You said you didn't want to be interrupted, said the imp defensively. Well, what have you got to say? It's 6:11, insert name here, said the imp meekly.
Good grief, why didn't you tell me?
Vimes looked aghast.
Because you said you didn't want to be interrupted, the imp quavered.
Yes, but not...
Vimes stopped. 11 minutes. He couldn't run it, not at this time of day.
6:00 is important, he muttered.
You didn't tell me that, said the imp, holding its head in its hands. You just said no interruptions. I'm really, really sorry.
Shine forgotten, Vimes looked around desperately at the nearby buildings. There wasn't much use for Clax Towers down here, where the slaughterhouse district met the docks, but he spotted the big semaphore tower atop the dock superintendent's office.
Get up there, he ordered, opening the box. Tell them you've come from me, and this is priority one, right? They're to tell Sidopolis Yard where I'm starting from. I'll cross the river on Misbegot Bridge and head along Prout's. The officers at the yard will know what this is all about. Go!
The imp went from despair to enthusiasm in an instant. It saluted.
Yes, indeed, sir. The Blue Nose TM Integrated Messenger Service will not let you down, insert name here. I shall interface right away.
It leapt down and became a disappearing blur of very pale green. Vimes ran down to the dockside and began to race upriver past the ships. The docks were always too crowded, and the road was an obstacle course of bales and ropes and piles of crates, with an argument every 10 yards. But Vimes was a runner by nature, and knew all the ways to make progress in the city's crowded streets. He dodged and leapt, jinked and weaved, and, where necessary, barged. A rope tripped him up, he rolled upright. A stevedore bumped into him, Vimes laid him out with an uppercut and speeded up in case the man had chums around. This was important. A shiny four-horse carriage swung out of Monkey Street with two footmen clinging to the back of it. Vimes speeded up in a desperate burst, grabbed a handhold, pulled himself up between the astonished footmen, dragged himself across the swaying roof, and dropped down onto the seat beside the young driver.
"Sydney Watch," he announced, flashing his badge. "Keep going straight ahead."
"But I'm supposed to turn left onto—" the young man began.
"And give it a touch of the whip, if you please," said Vimes, ignoring him. "This is important."
"Oh, right. Death-defying high-speed chase, is it?" said the coachman, enthusiasm rising. "Right. I'm the boy for that. You got your man right here, sir. Do you know, I can make this carriage go along for 50 yards on two wheels? Only old Miss Robinson won't let me. Right side or left side, just say the word. Hya! Hya!"
"Look, just—" Vimes began as the whip cracked overhead.
"Of course, getting the horses to run along on two legs was the trick. Actually, it's more of a hop, you might say," the coachman went on, turning his hat around for minimum wind resistance. "Here, want to see my wheelie?"
"Not especially," said Vimes, staring ahead.
"The hooves don't half raise sparks when I do me wheelie, I can tell you. Here!"
The scenery was blurring. Ahead was the cut-through leading to Two Pint Dock. It was normally covered by a swing bridge. Normally. It was swung now. Vimes could see the masts of a ship being warped out of the dock and into the river.
"Oh, don't you bother about that, sir," yelled the coachman beside him. "We'll go along the quay and jump it."
"You can't jump a two-master with a four-horse carriage, man!"
"I bet you can if you're in between the masts, sir. Hya! Hya!"
Ahead of the coach, men were running for cover. Vimes pushed the boy back into his seat, grabbed a handful of reins, put both feet against the brake lever, and hauled. The wheels locked. The horses began to turn. The coach slid, the metal rims of the wheels sending up sparks and the throaty scream of metal. The horses turned some more. The coach began to swing, dragging the horses with it, whirling them out like fairground mounts. Their hooves made trails of fire across the cobblestones. At this point, Vimes let go of everything, gripped the underside of the seat with one hand, held onto the rail with the other, shut his eyes, and waited for all the noise to die away. Blessedly, it did. Only one little sound remained, a petulant banging on the coach roof, caused, probably, by a walking stick. A querulous, elderly female voice could be heard saying, "Johnny, have you been driving fast again, young man?" "A bootlegger's turn," Johnny breathed, looking at a team of four steaming horses now facing back the way they'd come. "I am impressed!" He turned to Vimes, who wasn't there. The men moving the ship had dropped their ropes and run at the sight of the coach and four spinning down the road toward them. The dock entrance was narrow. A man could easily scramble up a rope onto the deck, run across the ship, and let himself down on the cobbles on the other side, and this a man had just done. Speeding along, Vimes could see that Miss Spagot Bridge was going to be a struggle. An overloaded hay wagon had wedged itself between the rickety houses that lined the bridge, ripped out part of someone's upper story, and had shed some of its load in the process. There was a fight going on between the carter and the unimpressed owner of the new bungalow. Valuable seconds were spent struggling over and through the hay until he was hurrying through the backed-up traffic to the other end of the bridge. Ahead of him was the wide thoroughfare known as Prout's, full of vehicles and uphill all the way. He wasn't going to make it. It must be gone 5 to 6 already. The thought of it, the thought of that little face. "Mr. Vimes!" He turned. A mail coach had just pulled out onto the road behind him and was coming up at a trot. Carrot was sitting beside the driver and waving frantically at him. "Get on the step, sir!" he yelled. "You don't have much time!" Vimes started to run and, as the coach drew level, jumped onto the door's step and hung on. "Isn't this the mail coach to Quirm?" he shouted, as the driver urged the horses into a canter. "That's right, sir," said Carrot. "I explained it was a matter of extreme importance." Vimes redoubled his grip. The mail coaches had good horses. The wheels, not very far away from him, were already a blur. "How did you get here so quick?" he yelled. "Short cut through the apothecary garden, sir." "What? That little walk by the river? That's never wide enough for a coach like this." "It was a bit of a squeeze, sir, yes. It got easier when the coach lamp scraped off." Vimes took in the state of the coach's side. The paintwork was scored all along it. "All right," he shouted. "Tell the driver I'll meet the bills, of course. But it'll be wasted, Carrot. Park Lane will be jam-packed at this time of day." "Don't worry, sir. I should hang on very tight if I were you, sir," shouted Carrot above the rising wind. Vimes heard the whip crack. This was a real mail coach. Mailbags don't care if they're comfortable. He could feel the acceleration. Park Lane would be coming up very soon. Vimes couldn't see much because the wind of their flight was making his eyes water, but up ahead was one of the city's most fashionable traffic jams. It was bad enough at any time of day, but early evening was particularly bad, owing to the Ankh-Morpork belief that right-of-way was the prerogative of the heaviest vehicle or the gobbiest driver. There were minor collisions all the time, which were inevitably followed by both vehicles blocking the junction while the drivers got down to discussing road safety issues with reference to the first weapon they could get their hands on. And it was into this maelstrom of jostling horses, scurrying pedestrians, and cursing drivers that the mail coach was heading, apparently at a full gallop. He shut his eyes